Hello and welcome back to The Magic of Songwriting. Today's guest is the incredibly talented Elana Stone, an ARIA award-winning singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist who moves effortlessly between folk, indie pop, and electronica. You might know her from the band All Our Exes Live in Texas, or from sharing the stage with Missy Higgins, the John Butler Trio, and so many others. Her new solo album, Married to the Sound, is a heartfelt, genre-blurring triumph. In this episode, we dive into the beauty and the mess of creative life. Elana opens up about juggling music, motherhood, and meaning, and how songwriting helps her stay grounded through it all. From writing songs in baby nap windows to finding joy in chaos, Elana shares candidly about what it means to keep creating through change, pressure, and doubt. We also explore the origin of her moving track, Cephalopods, written in iHeart Songwriting Club, and how it grew from a spontaneous, experimental spark into something much bigger. This is a conversation full of warmth, insight, and a gentle encouragement for anyone trying to make something meaningful in the world. Thanks for joining me. I'm Francesca De Valence. Welcome to the Magic of Songwriting podcast with iHeart Songwriting Club. In this podcast, we help you reconnect with and experience the transformation, the joy, and the magic of songwriting so that you can become the songwriter you've always dreamed of being. I'm Francesca De Valence, and I'll be your guide. Let it go. Big welcome to the Magic of Songwriting podcast. Elana, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Francesca. I'm very excited to be here.
Oh, I'm excited to have you here because I'm such a fan of your work, both from what I can listen to on all the streaming sites, but also having seen you live, like, you're awesome.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for coming to my gig where there was like 20 people there and you were one of them. And I thought, wow, this is Brisbane. Really, really came out.
I genuinely could not give a poop, and I know it's a very different thing on the other end of the, you know, of it all, but that there were 20 people in the room because I could hear every note that you sang and played, and we were all with you on the journey, and it was such a beautiful concert. And I know from an artist perspective, it probably would feel different. You're like, oh, you know, does this represent my worth? All those sorts of shitty questions that we run through our head.
Yeah.
But yeah, what was the going people on in the room.
With, yeah. Oh, I had a great time. I mean, I really did have a great time at that gig. That was our last, I think that was our last gig of the tour. And, and you know, having said we had 20 people in the room, we had gold people in the room, you know, you and Jack Hardy and Megan Washington and like I could probably name every single person. Someone accused my audience of graffitiing the toilets after that show, and I was like, I basically knew everyone in the room. There's no one in that room that would have graffitied the toilets other than maybe some children accidentally. Like, anyway, no, I had a great time, and I think once the gigs started, that stuff, I don't know, it just all becomes like, it shapes the room, and you kind of go, well, I'm really gonna get to know everyone in here, and we're gonna have a time, and yeah, I just like you make it a unique experience.
you do, yeah. And it really takes a lot of fortitude to be able to show up in that highest self kind of way, as opposed to crumbling under the disappointment of, you know, we've come all the way around Australia and 20 of you showed up.
But do you know what, Francesca? I've learned enough now that that gig was just the day after a Missy Higgins gig. So I did a matinee. Pretty much the flights were paid for. And my bass player is also in Missy's band. And so I just had to fly my drummer up, get him some accommodation, and then fly us all back. And we got to play our songs in Brisbane. So I feel like, you know,
so success. You were just smart about it. You were just smart about it, right?
I just kind of hope for the best and expect the worst these days.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, you are a very seasoned performer, hugely. You're just on the road. It seems like you're on the road all the time, and you're regularly playing with Missy Hickens in her band and Josh Pike and so many other people that you've toured with, and you continually tour with both in sort of, you know, dual lineups, but also in the band. I mean, I reckon a lot of people listening are going to go, how do we get to play with Missy Higgins, and how do you get to be on Josh Pike's band? You know, so you're an artist, you're a songwriter in your own right, and you're joining the stage with these people. Tell us about those opportunities, how they came up for you.
Well, the Missy one was a very slow, long kind of build, I guess, because I think I sang with her in about 2010 for like an iTunes, I'm going to say, conference that she had to FIFO in to Sydney and pick up a band for the day. And I got recommended for that. So then, you know, years went by and my best friend Zoe started playing in her band as her bass player. And Sarah Belkner, my other very good friend, started playing keys, and they both were doing backing vocals. And they had Madeline Page doing the part that Maybe. I'm now doing.
Yeah.
Mads went off and worked for Google in San Francisco and left a gap there. And at the time I was touring pretty heavily with All Our Exes Live in Texas. So I guess in terms of like harmonizing and doing that sort of band work, I was very much deep in the throes of that, but not really making much money, because everything we made we were sort of putting back into that project. So having that gig come up was a bit of a lifesaver at that time, financially, and just to have something outside of that band, which was quite all consuming. So yeah, that came up and I kind of went, oh, I'd love to do this, but I didn't expect to be doing it 8 years later.
Wow.
Yeah, everyone in that band has kind of spent a long time in it, and the crew has been there even longer. There are 20 plus year crew members. And yeah, and everyone has had a baby as well and stayed in the band. So I think everyone except the drummer. So it's just a band that you can have babies and be there for a long time, because Missy's an excellent boss.
I was going to say, it takes a great boss to be able to bring that level of loyalty.
Yes.
And
yes.
Grit, right?
Yes. I mean, she gave us like a bailout during the pandemic financially. Wow. She's a very generous person. And, yeah, I mean, she does – she's a national icon. She does well in the Australian music industry, so she's a wonderful person to be associated with. And I really, yeah, I'm just really lucky to be able to work for her. Josh Pike, we went to the same primary school.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah, he was 3 years above me, so we didn't have that much to do with each other, but I guess you sort of remember those people. And he's a friend of my brother's. They went to the same high school. It's very much like an old Inner West Balmain Roselle kind of friendship. And then when I was playing in All Our Exes Live in Texas, he became a fan of that band. We started writing together when I was back in Sydney. And then I guess it's evolved into me playing in his band. He was producing some of my music. It's just kind of a really long relationship. Uh-oh, now my phone's ringing. I told you there was going to be no such thing.
You're good, all good. Unless that was Josh or Missy, in which case bring them on the podcast. Since we're talking about them, their ears must be running hot.
Yeah.
Look, what I'm hearing from you is that it's, you know, it's a long relationship building endeavor working as a musician. You know, there's multiple streams of income. You know, there's lots of different gigs that you do. You're making music and touring with other artists, touring your own projects, selling merch, all of those sorts of different income streams that allow a musician, a career musician, to make a living. And then also, you know, it's about building those relationships and keeping them alive so that there is something
that people will recommend you for in the future? And, you know, you don't want to burn any bridges, right?
Oh, no. Yeah, it's a very small world. I think, you know, it's impossible to I wouldn't say don't burn any bridges. I would just say stick to your values and be authentic, because it's hard. It's hard to be in the industry that we're in, where you're, you know, around people 24 hours a day, and there's alcohol, and there's, you know, very emotional kind of subject matter and all that stuff. Like, it's a hard industry to stay safe professionally in. But I think being authentic, that's all I can really do, is be authentic and be and keep turning up for people. And I don't know, I've in the latter part of my career, I've tried to find where I can be of value more than where I can have my agenda met. I think that you might feel the same, having created this amazing platform for writers to express themselves. I think there's something really wonderful about creating value for other people. And yeah, I guess being utilized. I enjoy being utilized, and that's what being a session musician or a teacher does for me. And it gives energy to my solo work, which I find is the hardest work.
Let's talk about this hardest work, being a solo artist. What is it about being a solo artist that you find not just the individual challenges, but the ongoing ones?
I think it's just that small business mentality where, you know, there's no sick days, there's no maternity leave. All of your highlights and your rejections are yours. So, yeah, there's just a kind of a very real kind of repercussions in it. Like when you're in a business with other people, you're insulated from a lot of that risk. And, yeah, as a solo artist, particularly because I've always pretty much been self-managed and got a record label now, ABC, but and a publicist, but, you know, I book all my own tours, and I have to answer to myself and be motivated by myself. And those things are, you know, they wax and wane. I'm not like consistently energized, so I kind of have to, you know, get up every morning and take myself for a swim and get myself a coffee, and also, you know, look after my kids, but then go like, right, back to the drawing board. And it feels like it's always back to the drawing board. It's never like, you're never standing on the shoulders of your previous experience. I always feel like I'm starting from the beginning again every time.
Why is that? Can you share a bit more about that? I don't know if I've ever heard it put quite that way. I might understand the feeling, but
I think it's just one of those industries that doesn't recognize age as a or experience as an asset so much. So it just, yeah, you're sort of always having to fight, not fight, but like
advocate
for yourself. Yeah. Yeah. And often, you know, you're at a disadvantage. So, yeah, I mean, I think of the other artists who are in the same kind of position as me, and I just want to help because I can see how brilliant they are. You know, in the same way, I kind of look at, I know like this is not a very good comparison, but I feel like when you become a doctor, you've got so much training and you do all this study, and I feel like especially when you're like a classical musician, there is an equivalent amount of training. I know the stakes aren't as high, like you're not saving lives, but you certainly are.
It's an argument in musicians saving lives, but anyway, that's semantics, yeah. Is it?
Have you watched The Studio yet with Seth Rogen?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God, you have to watch it. There's a really funny episode about that where he goes to like a doctor's conference and he starts to argue that what he does as like the head of a movie-making network is as valid as what they do, and they're just like, no, sorry, buddy.
So coming back to your comparison of being a doctor and the hours and the qualifications and
Yeah, it, I guess the point that I'm making is that it doesn't like accelerate you into the profession. There's no
career ladder
path. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. Not one that's easily perceived, I guess. They're certainly like, I certainly feel like as an artist, every year I am building on something, but it feels a little bit more like a sandcastle.
Yeah, I really hear what you meant now by I feel like I'm starting again every time, because there really isn't any progression or career ladder as an artist, and you're really kind of creating your own plan without much resource, you know, without much of a resource or a team to help bring it around, you know, to bring it out into the world. And yeah, it's big. It's a big energy.
Yeah. But you only need, like, I feel like you do only need one or two people. Like, I think trying to do it in a vacuum is pretty tricky. But I think if you can find one or two people that do really believe in what you do and will sit down with you and give you that time and that energy, I think that's all you need, and just kind of keep coming back to those people and build that if you can, and build that in terms of your audience as well. And I think with things like Patreon, I haven't used it, but they seem like good platforms for that kind of self-managed artist to actually make a living and have connection with their audience. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I've not personally been down that road, but I have seen artists, and to be honest, it looks like another marketing activity just to bring people into it, and a content creation. It's a social media platform with a paywall, essentially.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and probably it's just you have to make whole new content for that.
Whole new content for that, right? Ugh. Yeah. So you've been a part of iHeart Songwriting Club sort of on and off since 2021. I'm curious, how did you hear about the club? Do you remember how you first heard about it? Because I know you joined my group.
Yeah.
But I don't remember how it came to be.
How did it? It must have been through Mamakin Spender. That must have been how I first heard about it. Because I know I came to your panel, the regional Wollongong APRA panel.
That's right.
And we met there. But I feel like I'd already heard of the club before that. So it must have been through Mamakin Spender and Danielle sort of talking about it. Because I went to Danielle and John's house, and she was writing like that day. She was like, I have to do this song for this thing. and she went off into the studio and wrote. So, yes, I think that was the first time I heard about it, which would have been like 2019.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. And then pandemic, and obviously probably your numbers went up quite dramatically during that time.
It wasn't dramatic, but the consistency was a lot more, you know, there was a greater capacity for artists to stay for longer. So, you know, generally they will come for half a year, write, and then go make an album and tour it and then come back and write. Whereas at the time, people started going from sort of on and off to staying. So a lot of people are still in the club from 2020. They were just right every week because they set up a practice that surpassed, you know, it takes a while to build a practice. There's a challenge in building the practice, but once you reach a certain amount of weeks or months, and that is, you know, varies on the research level of what that is. And I think it's definitely more what it takes for you to get to that place where it's just, I just write a song a week. That's it. You know, they've surpassed the challenge, and now it's just a part of their week, and they realize their lives are more enriched by writing a song a week than sort of pressured by writing a song a week, if that makes sense.
Yeah. How do you, what, because obviously you've managed to do that. I don't know if I've managed to do that, but what is, like, what does your songwriting day look like? Have you got like a day penciled in each week, or is it
for the last couple of years? It's kind of been, so on Thursday is the beginning of the new week, but for the last couple of years, just life circumstances has led to it being a Wednesday afternoon. mm-hmm. with the day before it's due or the day of the due date. But yeah. like before that, it used to be a weekend, like somewhere in my weekend, I could find a little bit more space energetically speaking or headspace speaking. But now my weeks and weekends are just so full with family and activities and, you know, delivering projects with iHeart Songwriting Club and other songwriting endeavors that it's like Wednesday afternoon and there's an hour there and we're going to yeah. smash out this song.
And sometimes and you do it in an hour.
I do it in an hour. And sometimes if I'm feeling like I don't want the pressure of the afternoon, I'll wake up a little bit earlier than normal and sit in bed and write it.
Mm.
Which actually cool. I find is a nicer approach than the I've waited till the afternoon and the pressure's on. But you know what? I know that something's going to come and I'm okay with the shittiest song. I'm okay with rubbish. I really am okay with rubbish because I think my practice is 560 songs in 560 weeks. Most of them are rubbish, right? But there's yeah. probably like 80 gold songs there that, you know, have made its way out into the world in various projects. But I know that if I just show up at that 2 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon and hit my hands on a piano or strum a guitar pattern or I usually start making a cup of tea and when I'm at the kettle, some melody will come with a lyric and then it's like, game on, we're in. I don't care if this is not yeah. on theme or not. I'm writing this damn song. And then yeah. it's like, huh, look, it came again.
I think the coolest thing about it is that because I don't love the idea of being, of having to practice scales or do any of that stuff. I really enjoy writing on instruments as a way of practicing and getting better at instruments, which is often yeah. my motivator because I'm always kind of trying to get better at the guitar or trying to get better at the piano. And I think the songwriting thing has two benefits or probably multiple benefits, but as well as just the practicing the songwriting, you're also practicing an instrument. And yeah, if you can do that, even
I taught myself
a week,
guitar.
That's amazing.
I taught myself guitar through the club. I had a guitar that was in my wardrobe for 8 years and I felt like really rubbish about myself. Like my sense of self-worth was pretty low because I was like, I always wanted to play guitar and I didn't. And so after 6 months of writing a song a week in the club, I was like, maybe I could teach myself two chords. And then I used those two chords and then I was like, well, maybe I can teach myself another two chords. And then after a couple of years, I started open tunings and that was super fun. And I pretty cool. – like if I'm going to play a show, I'm pretty much not going to bring my keyboard.
That's cool.
I just play guitar and I am not a great guitarist, but I am a good enough guitarist.
Yeah, I can hear like – yeah, I can hear the progression just from the start of the pandemic to now – from writing because that's when I liked I just find you know it's the thing where you get an instrument out that isn't your main instrument to try and change up your approach and stuff and yeah it's just I can see that progression and I think it's just because you want to like when you're writing you have to play things a million times like in mm-hmm. order to if especially if you want to record it and not be laughed off the face of the map by your other members of your club. Yeah, it's just a great motivator. I always find like public humiliation a really good motivator. Sometimes it's not good enough to get me off my butt, but it's decent. Like if I know that I'm going to absolutely shame myself by
trying to
play guitar.
So how do you approach your club write? You know, what's your way? I mean, I sense you haven't found your practice yet. I mean, you've written quite a lot of songs in the club and, you know, quite a lot came into play for your last album. Third album? What album is this of yours?
Yeah,
fourth,
it's the fourth.
Fourth album.
But
fourth album.
But I had an EP, so I don't know what you call that. I go in and out of having a practice. It just really depends on touring and, you know, I've had a couple of babies in the last 5 years and that's definitely changed things in terms of energy and consistency. But even then, even before that, I'm not a particularly scheduled person. so I need deadlines and I need, the fear of public humiliation to kind of get me to practice and to write. And I think that's why I've always kind of planned things and given myself performance opportunities, because that is what makes me write. And of course, initially I was always just writing to express myself and to understand grief and all that kind of stuff. But now it's also my form of social interaction and fun. A lot of this album that just came out was very much like during the pandemic, thinking about what I needed and what other people needed to get through the day. And I felt like I couldn't listen to anything sad. I just had a baby. I was so the world seemed a little bit like endy. the songwriting thing, I mean, there was just endless amounts of time for it. Mm-hmm. But within that, there were naps. So there were very scheduled times where the baby would go down for 45 minutes, and I knew it was going to be 45 minutes. And there's nothing better than like a very small window to deliver a piece of creative work. And so I don't know, that was achievable enough for me. And I was, I guess, not just outrageously tired, or I don't know how I even did it. I think I was whacked out on hormones and this need to prove that I could still be a songwriter, even having had kids, and that I was still relevant and all that kind of jazz that goes on in your mind when you become a mom and when you're getting older in the industry. I'm sort of like, I can still do this. I was squeezing it in around the baby, around a speech pathology degree which I had started. Do you know what my practice is, Francesca? My practice is get so busy that songwriting is like the thing that I do for fun, that I have to do in order to like relax.
That sounds a bit hectic on your nervous system though.
It's not good, but I don't know. I just seem to like if there's endless amount of time for it, I can't do it. I can't make myself sit down. I think it's like I'm pretty convinced that like everyone on this planet right now, I have ADHD. But it's that thing of like, okay, I really want to do this now because I'm not allowed to do it. It's kind of like I rebel against my own scheduling. Anyway, I've gone on a massive tangent. The question was, what's my practice? My practice is non-existent, but I've realized something about myself, and that's if I'm really busy, I can get a lot of stuff done, and then I can squeeze my creativity around it because I know that it has to be in there somewhere.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't have – I'm trying to develop like a regime now that I have a bit more time, and my partner's helping me with that because he's very schedule-oriented. And I'm trying to practice on Tuesdays and I'm trying to write on Thursdays when that can actually happen.
But so the whole day sounds dangerous though, right?
It's so dangerous, yeah.
So isn't it like would it be helpful to set a time limit around that? Like I practice on Tuesdays from 9 till 10 and that's it? Like do we 100%. Need to? You know, and then
100%.
Because the whole day, it means it won't get done because I've got the whole day to get it done, so I won't get it done.
You're right, and then now I'm going to take that piece of advice, and I'm going to try it out. But yes, it is.
I mean,
really
maybe
good
you could
advice.
Write 5 songs on Thursday in the whole day. Oh, look at your face.
I tried writing one a week, and that was, you know, I mean, I was in a group with whatever 6 other songwriters, and we all just started flagging, and that was just so confronting. I was like, guys, is anyone even here? I put 2 songs up and no one even listened to them.
Oh, no. For those listening, we did try a different thing. Like Alana and her friends all got together and did a private club group. Actually, it was from that gig that you did that I came to, your album launch, because Jack was in the room. And Jack Carty and a couple of other Emily Lubitz, who's been in the club too, and they were all saying, "Oh, you know, Jack's like, I've got some songs coming out from the club," and I'm like, "Great, let me know." And he goes, "Oh, it was so good, love to do it again." Or paraphrasing everybody, right? And then I'm like, "Well, why don't you all join together?" And that's where it came. So you all had your private group of six or seven songwriters and you all made it to about halfway through and you kind of were like, we can't keep going.
It's like, help, Francesca, can you stop? Can you stop the machine?
Yeah, no, you asked me if we could stop and I said, well, I can't stop. But I think this is where in like – here's the pain point, right, is that you want it to stop. But my advice always is just show up to the next week. Like yeah. It's not about doing 10 songs and it's not about doing 10 songs. It's about finding a rhythm in life that you can get on board with. So, you know, if that's you have to miss a week in order to find your rhythm the next week, then do that and don't catch up because catch up is the worst thing anybody could do. The amount of pressure, because that has a mindset of perfection, enoughness, and that's debilitating, whereas it's like, I'm going to skip that and just show up for this one, has a sense of lightness and freedom about it. So my recommendation, though I have to say I would feel debilitated if at all I ever missed a week in the club. But I think because I'm the poster girl for the club, I can't, right? And it's not hard anymore because I did the however long practice it took to establish the practice. It's not hard anymore. But at the beginning, it was really hard. It was really, really, really hard. I appreciate that's difficult. But my advice is just keep going. If you want to be a songwriter that writes songs every week, the reality is we've got to write songs. We're songwriters, right? Just keep going. It doesn't have to be about did you catch up? Did you perfect it? Did you do it well? It's like, did you write a song? That's it. Or did you go to write a song and you didn't get a song out of it? Fine. That's also valid.
Yeah. I think like it's interesting. It's been interesting seeing how different people approach their creative periods. And I think like, yeah, one of my really good friends and bandmates, Georgia Mooney, seems to have to go away like to an island in Greece or like to Canada in a frozen tundra it's like she needs this total isolation and complete landscape change to get to that place of songwriting headspace. And like I would love to do that, but I would prefer to work it into my life in the way that you're describing, where it's just like going to a therapy session every week and you just commit to it and you just do it. But unfortunately, it does take me more than an hour. Like I think the times that I've written a song in under an hour, I could probably count on one hand. So I think like I've always loved this like pressure making diamonds kind of attitude of like getting these songs out. But after that 10-week period, I always just kind of like the idea that you've been doing this for however long just blows my tiny mind. Like it's incredible. But I feel like it's a bit horses for courses with this stuff. And so I think like having a practice is amazing and very necessary. But what that is just depends on who you are and what kind of brain you have and what kind of life you have, I guess, and just how the world affects you in various ways. I mean, we were riding and Emmy was in the middle of that cyclone. You were too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people manage to ride in all sorts of situations, but yeah, just I think just whatever it is, working out what that is for you and then kind of creating, I hate saying creating space, but creating a space where you can actually achieve what you're trying to achieve. And I think the cool thing about I Heart Songwriting Club is that period of that 10 songs, it does seem to have a thematic link because of the fact there is a time constraint. There are probably some things that you're thinking about around that time. You know, when we were doing it just recently, it was the presidential change in the US and we were all writing some very political songs and there was a lot of kind of awareness about world issues. And I think it's just like that's really interesting because you seem to get into the same, a similar kind of zeitgeist as the other songwriters. So it's just, it's super cool, but yeah, I just also think not everyone can achieve it.
I agree. It's not. I often say to people, it's not for everybody. And yeah. I'd love to be able to kind of create a, you know, another sort of stream where it's kind of like come every other week. But I think you'd have the same issues that people would have.
You
it's
would.
Like if you're struggling to find time every week, you'd probably struggle to find time every other week.
You're right.
So I've thought about it and I've decided I'm not going to do it because I don't think it would actually achieve anything hugely beneficial. I think it's about, to me, this is just from my perspective, and, you know, I have been doing this a long time and I do speak to a lot of songwriters. Yeah. To me, it's about the belief that a songwriter has to write a good song or a finished song or some sort of – there's some sort of expectation about what that song has to be in order for it to be written. That, to me, creates pressure. That's the non-necessary pressure, like the pressure, the sort of negative pressure, if that makes sense, as opposed to the pressure, the positive pressure, which is the time. It's like time, put your stopwatch on. We've got an hour, let's do it, as opposed to the expectation that that song has to be used or good enough or that's the part, in my opinion, that I think creates the biggest hurdle for people to show up because I think, you know, in a couple of these conversations in this season, you know, because I'm talking to lots of songwriters who've written albums as part of the club.
Yeah.
And those who've written, you know, the whole album as part of the club, they are generally like quite long-term members and they speak of, you know, this being like a gym workout. You've just got to show up to the gym and you've got a coach there and, you know, you're just going to do whatever you're going to do on the day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know about you, but sometimes when I turn up to the gym, I'm like really going at a quarter pace. I'm gonna put a quarter of the weights on the barbell, right? I'm not even gonna do half because I'm just not up for that.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I'm like, I'm gonna push today. I'm feeling really good, right? And then and then I show up, and then I decide in the moment how much I can give, but I'll be there for the whole class, and I might sit out some rounds, but I'll be there for the whole class, and I'll go, well, I showed up, and that was all that I had to do, right?
Yeah.
Show up and participate. Maybe that's a nice way to put it, is show up and participate. That for me, I think, is the minimum bare bones of this practice for any songwriter, is show up, participate, you're done. You did what you had to do.
Yeah. And Darcy McNulty, who was in the group with me recently, he just described it as like he's just going to think of it as sitting on the floor with his nephews and nieces and just drawing with some crayons. And non-judgmental kind of creativity. And I think that's a really good way of looking at it. And if you're doing that once a week, you're probably going to come up with some pretty cool crayon masterpieces at some point.
Yeah.
And some nonsense.
And even it's not even the outcome. How will you feel doing that?
Yeah.
How will you feel sitting on the ground for an hour a week crayoning? Because I reckon you're going to have a bit of fun.
And that, like, to me, having spoken about kind of outcomes and stuff, that has to be the payoff. Like that part of the whole process, putting albums out, writing, you know, performing, all that stuff. The biggest payoff has to be in that moment where you're creating the song, if you're a songwriter, because that's actually to me the purest part. And kind of the most, I don't know, that's where all the skeleton of the bigger concept is. And so if you don't enjoy that part of it, it's kind of hard to control. It's hard to control the outcomes, basically.
Yeah.
It's impossible to control the outcomes, but you can kind of create a beautiful environment to write in.
Yeah, I love that. I love that so much. Can we turn our attention to one of your songs that you wrote in the club that also features on your album?
Mm-hmm.
I was in your group when you created the first, I think when you joined for the first couple of terms. And I mean, I loved listening to what you made. It was unique and adventurous and I would say you're an experimental writer. Like when you get in the writing space, you're willing to just kind of go out there, right, all the way, wherever it's going to take me. And you chose the song Cephalopods to share today. I'll just give a bit of background to the theme. So this is back in August 2021, I think. Let me just check that date. Yeah, August 2021. The theme for the club for the week, for those listening, I give a theme and a guideline or a challenge, an extra sort of challenge, is the theme was Amplify. And I said around that, this theme is intended sorry, this theme isn't intended to be about a Marshall stack of amps, but if you've got it, please flaunt it. For those who don't have this luxury, the theme is intended to invite you to focus on what you want to amplify in the world. So there were two challenges. One was to be inspired by a rock style or a rock subgenre for this week's song, and the other one was to create a hooky instrumental motif. That's a lot of brief there, you know. This kind of the kind of idea of creating something that was a rock or like, you know, turn. There's a lot of rock music, you know. Sorry, there's a lot of guitarists in the club, but I rarely sort of lean into genre themes. But I thought, oh, we can have a bit of fun with this, and I learned some power chords, and that was really fun. I remember writing my amplified song, and I got my electric guitar, and I turned on some distortion, and I wrote such a rubbish song. It was fun, but but you created something very different to that. So, can you talk us through your writing process for Cephalopods? And yeah, would love to hear about how you came up with this.
It is a while ago, so I'm going to have to cast my mind back. But so August 2021, I had just moved out of my house that I was living in with my sister and had just had a baby. So during the pandemic, I was locked down with my sister, whose name is Yael Stone. She's an actor and an activist, and she's got a very distinct moral code in her life. She's, I mean, she's trying to save the world, essentially, which is a lot to live with and a lot to live up to in general. But also incredibly inspiring. She also lives with her partner Jack, who runs AIM, which is this Indigenous mentoring experience. And both of them together are just kind of like a powerhouse couple of world-saving craziness. And I was having a baby. I was living with their little kids, and it was the pandemic. It seemed as though this was an opportunity for change, for rewriting a lot of scripts. And, you know, planes were grounded. What a crazy thing to even think about now, this idea that we can stop business as usual and actually, you know, pay attention to nature. And I see the pandemic as part of that. It's just like an emergency that's emerged out of nature and out of like human, I guess, populations. Yeah, I think in terms of like the subject matter being about kindness and about the natural world and relationships with each other and relationships with the natural world, that's certainly the backdrop that I was coming from. In terms of like the instruments and the melody and the chords, that was entirely a music by chance game that I sometimes play when I can't think of what to write melodically.
Take me through the game.
So I literally have a board game. I don't think I used it in this instance, but I actually have a board game that's called Tall Stories that I used to have when I was a kid, and it's got a bunch of subject matters, and you can roll a dice and land on a subject matter, and then you get two words and you have to tell a story and include those two words in under 2 minutes. I just loved this game growing up, but I just really loved this concept of rolling a dice and just kind of – yeah, getting dealt whatever you're dealt and then playing with that as a theme. And I did a little bit of that because I studied composition for my first year of uni, and there was, you know, aleatoric music by chance, where you roll a dice. John Cage did a lot of that stuff. So I kind of took from that this idea that you could roll a melody. So if you roll like a 2 and a 6, you're rolling, you know, if you're in B minor, which in this case I was, you're rolling like a D and a G sharp, I think. So those are the first two notes are D.
So in 2 and 6, are you talking about the scale degree notes or the chord?
Yes.
So maybe C sharp. And
sorry, you're absolutely
sorry, right. I'm just thinking, I'm trying to make this work in my head. So B, C sharp, D sharp.
You're right.
E. Oh, it's minor, sorry.
Minor, yes. Yep. Okay. I was yeah, so the first two notes of Cephalopods are D, F sharp, And then I wish I had a piano in front of me right now.
That's okay. It's all good. So those scale degree notes were rolled by dice.
Yeah, basically.
Does a dice go up to seven? How do you get seven?
You can have two dice. So you can have all 12 because there are 12 notes in total. I guess
yes,
there's 11.
Right, okay.
So you can have all the semitones as well. So you can use two dice or you can just use one and, I don't know, make up the rest. But I think I rolled the first three notes and the rest kind of came from that. Bah, 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 and then I kind of went da, 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 and made up the rest. But I also rolled the chords, the first two chords.
And so talk us through that. So like rolling a two would be a chord two?
So, yeah, rolling a two would be a chord two. Rolling a four would be a chord four. So if you're in B minor, you're rolling a C sharp minor is a chord two minor and a four is yep. the E major. And, you know, I mean, you can interpret this in any way you like because yeah. this is just how I probably would have rolled for the key center and the time signature as well. So you can roll for almost anything. And so, yeah, that's just a starting point. And I feel like you only need a little kick along at the start. And then once that kind of mood is in your head, you can go anywhere from there. But I just found that super helpful as a writing tool.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just, I just need something like something. I find it hard to write from. That's why the themes are really great that you, mm-hmm. that you guys do in iHeart Songwriting Club. You're not starting from an absolute blank slate. So, yeah, that's kind of where I went. And then I often kind of sit down and give myself a 15-minute time limit to get to write lyrics or just to stream of consciousness an idea and then kind of apply that to the melody. I don't think I did that in this case. I think I just was like, amplify, let's talk about what the anthem for the current moment is and just yeah, that's what came out. But I was listening to a lot of Randy Newman and Harry Nilsson at the time, and the cephalopods thing was just a big word that was in my head. And I liked how awkward it sounded to sing that at the end of a phrase. Like it sort of just kind of jumped on, it's shoved onto the end of a phrase. And yeah, I don't know. It's very through composed. Like I certainly didn't go like, verse,
there is
chorus.
A theme, but yeah, I see what you're saying. The structure is quite loose.
Yeah, and it ends with this kind of whole B section that's not really, and that, it does come back to the instrumental kind of motif at the end. But none of this was planned. It was kind of just like whatever came out at the time, and there was this fish tank bubbling away in the background with some fish in it that I was looking after for my sister. And I don't know if that had any bearing on the theme, but yeah, it kind of adds to the the ambience yeah. of that original demo anyway.
Can we listen to it? The original?
Yeah.
The first iteration of Cephalopods? All right, here it is. V1 Cephalopods by Alana Stone. Thank you.
cephalopods. But now you know you're part of it all. You're just a bug on the expansion of life.
Loving watching your face.
Like, oh, it's different. It's different to how it ended up. I thought it was kind of fully formed, but no. Cool. Oh,
it's mostly fully formed.
Yeah, it's pretty much there. I think I added another verse and then there's just some kind of little snips and edits. But, yeah, it's pretty much there.
It's pretty much there. And the response, the feedback from your group, you know, one person says, oh, my goodness, I could cry with how beautiful this song is. From the opening chords, my heart was already melting. I love this song. It's my hands-down favourite of yours, so delicate, unique, like a precious little fossil in itself. You know, and it goes on. That's just one person's piece of feedback. Like, did you look at that feedback and go, there's something here? Or did you already... Or did you kind of know that?
No, I think that feedback was quite bolstering. I never really know if something's good until someone reacts to it. Isn't that terrible? But usually the first person I show it to is my partner, and I trust his opinion. I trust him to tell me if something stinks. And at that time I was also sending stuff to my bandmate Luke, who I wrote some of the songs on the album with, and he really tells me if something's bad. Sometimes
that's
I'm
good.
Like,
you need someone to tell you if something's no good.
I know. Yeah, I can't really tell, to be honest. Half the time, I just get really into the writing and the production, and then I send it to Luke, and he's like, "This is horrible."
Well, I mean, I think at least what you can tell is if people are over-delivering the feedback as if how good it is, you know they're not kind of sitting on the fence about it or trying to, you know, even if someone in the club didn't like a song, they're probably not going to say, I don't really like this, unless you've been in the group together for years and years and years, in which case you probably can. But, yeah. they're probably not going to be so superfluous in the amount of love they share for it. So you kind of know that you're onto a winner when you get that amount of love for your song, right? You've got 8 people that gave, you know, love feedback in that. I think I agree with you, it's bolstering. So once this song had been, oh, I have to say that I was really listening to the theme of Amplify, and I could definitely hear the, as you said, the anthem of what you're trying to share or the message, which totally is amplified. And the Marshall stack, you know, that I referred to earlier, I'm hearing is the fish tank.
So, not know, much of a stack, but yes, it could be like the buzzing. The fish tank is the Marshall stack.
There's some analogy or there's some sort of comparison there. But you have actually shared this song and the world beyond the album. Like I remember on socials after you released the album, soon after this song came, I think this song was a single, is that right?
I think it was like, I don't think it ended up being a single. I think it was like a recommend. Well, I don't even remember that. I was saving it for this like, Earth.
Yes, you know how they do the something.
Yes, I kind of released it at this 1 Million Women Festival, which is a festival of sustainability and a festival of ideas, and that was kind of the launch of it, which was really cool because I got my friend who also did the footage for the video. I got all of his underwater snorkeling footage because he's a videographer, and it's got actual squid and cuttlefish in the video. So I performed in front of that, which was just amazing. It was really cool. But now I was thinking about it the other day, and I was like, I think I said that I was trying to be an octopus in the world, and I described that as being like soft on the outside with a hard interior. But like octopuses do not have a hard interior. They don't even have – I don't even think they have a bone in their body.
Let alone a bad bone in their body.
Exactly. They don't have any bones. And I said this in front of like 1,000 people. I'm like, I'm trying to be more like an octopus.
I mean, like there's a lot of muscle though, strong muscle.
Surely, surely. Anyway, just anatomy aside, yeah, that was kind of the launch was just this performance that I did.
I can't help but feel like, you know, you took this amplify theme and you created this song and then you amplified it to 1 million women. Like, that's so cool. That is cool.
That was fortuitous. That was definitely a bizarre and wonderful haphazard thing that happened. There was no intent behind that other than taking a gig and making it work in terms of like, yeah, playing
that
song.
What you can say, yeah.
Yeah.
What you have to say and what you have to offer as an artist. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. Maybe that word amplify carried with you. Maybe there was a, you know, a seed of intention, an energetic intention that you planted by creating it. Who knows? Like,
I think it's great. I think it's such a great offering to anyone to just like make a values list, like make a list of your values. And my partner, who's a psychologist, makes his clients do this all the time because, you know, we all get caught up in these decisions in life, these machinations, and we're like, should I do this thing or not do this thing? Does this feel weird? Does this align with my values? And you can actually download these off the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're real things. Questionnaires about what you believe and what kind of person you want to be and what kind of person you are. And so I think that was a great songwriting theme because it sort of asks you to distill that in a song, which is really hard to do. But I think you just don't want to overthink it. You want to go like, no, what's important to me? Like what?
Yeah, there's a sense
of
innocence, I suppose, when you come back to the purity of who you are. What do you stand for? What do you want to live in? I love those values assessments too. I encourage my mentees in my mentoring program to do that because then they understand as an artist, if an opportunity comes their way and it's like, oh, it's paid, but it's for, you know, for me, I don't drink alcohol, so I don't want to be aligned with an alcohol brand. Or, you know, if there's an event happening, a music industry event happening, and there's like soft drinks and water as the only option for non-alcohol drinkers, I'll be the advocate saying, here are local suppliers of zero beer. Here are some mocktails that can be, you know, like please provide adult drinks for adults when they don't drink alcohol because it's a safe environment. It's a better, you know, it's a, you're including more options for people to stay safe. And, you know, so again, if someone says, oh, we'll give you $5,000 to play at this alcohol event, it's like, doesn't align with my values. I can't live in my values if I'm going to do that. So I'm a huge advocate for this. And we can really, what is it, like flourish as artists if we really understand who we are.
Yeah, and they're really good things to come to when you start making a team, if you're in that position, come to your team with these already fleshed out kind of ideas of who you are. So you can be like, I'm not going to perform at an Australia Day event or because of these reasons. Mm-hmm. And then you don't get approached. Like then you actually just don't get asked, which is actually a massive weight off your shoulders because you don't have to make that decision. They're just, yeah, I think it's a good thing to think about. I mean, some people just are like, well, I just want to do things for money and that's okay.
Well, that's one of their
what
values.
Your values are.
Yeah. Their values are making money and that's valid and legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it. Go and live in your values, whatever that is.
Yeah.
So how did this song evolve from a production point of view? What was the next step? Did you, you know, re-record it yourself? Did you take it to a studio? Did you work with Luke?
This one I took to Free Energy Device, which is Richie Belkner's studio in Sydney. He does a really beautiful sort of acoustic, he works with a lot of jazz musicians, and I've been working with him since 2009 on more kind of like jazz acoustic live stuff, if I do that sort of stuff. So I brought him those it was Shitty Shit and Cephalopods and Bulletproof, which were mm-hmm. all I had songwriting songs.
Yeah,
they're all club songs, and I went to the studio and recorded them all in a day with my bandmates, and we even shot the music video in that same day.
What? That's intense.
Yeah, but you know, like we all live in different places, so when you can all get together, it's just like, oh my god, make it happen. Mm-hmm. And luckily, it was good. You know, we came out with three really good recordings and a music video. But Cephalopods was just like, he's got a beautiful grand piano. Zoe and Luke just had to do those big Beatlesy harmonies. I'm pretty sure we did it all just live. Oh, and Darren Percival dropped in that day, Darren, to just like say hi to Richie, and we ended up getting him in the choir. So he was this very like low voice in the choir. So it was just one of those like, you know, magical recording events. But yeah, it was like a one take wonder. And it's cool because like there's a really low note in there. And I remember being quite, whenever I go to record in a proper studio, if I have to pay like a studio rate, I get so stressed that my voice usually like goes berserk, or I get tonsillitis or something.
Oh God, really?
I don't know if that happens to anyone else, but yeah, that day was as per usual being bonkers, and but meant that I had this really low, I had access to a very low part of my voice, and it was good for that song, good for that recording. But yeah, it's all live, so it's all played and sang at the same time.
Oh well, no wonder you can do three in a day, because you're not, you know, multi-tracking and all those sorts of things in different booths, and you're just setting up a good room sound and getting a great performance.
And that's all I wanted to do after, I don't know about you, but after lockdown, I just wanted to be in a room with humans making music rather than multi-tracking myself, which I did a lot of as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm really loved hearing how you recorded those three songs in a day. I think that's quite heartening for a lot of musicians who, you know, when you look at a studio day rate and you're kind of like a song per day, or, you know, some studio will recommend 2 days per song, and I'm like, no, come on, be rehearsed, be ready to go in there and play it. It's you can get great quality with great players if you're rehearsed and you're ready to go.
And if there's any pre-production that you, like I brought the synth sounds for Bulletproof. I had a lot of stuff that was pre-recorded to the tempo that I wanted the songs to be at, so they could then just be applied to those live recordings. So if you're just needing like live drums, live vocals and a piano, then you can bring those extra elements like synths, and you know, you can track other like electric guitars afterwards or whatever, backing vocals afterwards. But yeah, you can do multiple songs in a day for sure once you're all set up.
Yeah, that's great. I love
that.
Away
you go.
I love that. That's so great that you brought in the synths prepared, you know, pre-prepared in your pre-production. Yeah. I remember when I first heard that song when it came out, I was like, no way. That's just one of those beautiful sonic experiences. They just go again and again and again. Aww. And again. It's so beautiful. And I put it on my playlist and I was like, listen to that again and again and again. It's really a special song. Like, and I think you would have heard that from other people. Surely I'm not the, you know, a rare person that says how beautiful that song is.
Yeah, it was the only one that Missy Higgins has ever gone, Cephalopods is a good song.
That's hilarious.
She really liked it, and I was like, yes. Yeah, and I don't think I've gotten feedback from her about any other song. I think, you know, I do think that kind of reached, yeah, people, different people. It's interesting, like the ballad thing too, because you never think a ballad is gonna reach people. I don't know why it's that kind of radio headspace making hits. It's an old school headspace. But you know, she's just made a a whole album of divorce ballads. So she was probably ready for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I definitely, yeah, I think it's like got jazz, like it's got a kind of, it's got a lot of elements that I really like.
It's live. Now that you're telling me how you recorded it, it's got that live sound to it too. It's that human resonance kind of element. It's not stayed or separate.
It's track. Yeah.
Yeah, it's connected. It's just all created in real time, and we get to hear it over and over again through a recording, which is beautiful. The whole album is such a triumph. You have the funnest pop songs with great hooks. You know, you've your synths in there, and it's just so much fun. I can only highly, highly recommend everybody go and listen to Married to the Sound by Alana Stone. It's such a fun album, and if you get a chance to hear her touring, whether it's headlining a show, co-headlining a show, playing support, or heck, even playing for Missy and Josh, please go and see Alana. Highly, highly, highly recommend the show. It'll be the best show of the year for you. Promise. Thanks so much.
That's so nice of you. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate you hosting me on this platform too.
Thanks for joining me for this episode. If you're ready to refine your craft and take your songwriting to new heights, our brand new online 10-week songwriting intensive is the perfect opportunity for you. This fully mentored course gives you the tools, insights, and personalized guidance to transform your songwriting. You'll master the art of crafting compelling melodies, deepen your understanding of harmony, and create songs that resonate with clarity and depth. Over the 10 weeks, you'll write 10 brand new songs and get detailed, actionable feedback from a professional songwriting mentor so that you can level up your writing in ways that you've never imagined. This course is a game changer designed to help you unlock your full creative potential and write songs that truly stand out. For more information, go to iHeartSongwritingClub.com/songwriting courses. Join me for the next episode where we'll explore another songwriter's album journey and uncover the magic behind their creative process. Thank you for listening. It's been a pleasure to spend this time with you. To help others connect with the magic of songwriting, we'd love it if you'd take a moment to rate or review our podcast or share it with anyone you think would benefit from it. And if you want to find your community of songwriters, visit us at iHeartSongwritingClub.com and let us help you reconnect with the magic of songwriting.
Let it go. Oh.